The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network is proud to present Mark Weber's World Watch. Mark Weber is director of the Institute for Historical Review, an independent think tank and publishing center. Visit them at ihr.org. And now, here's your host, Mark Weber.
Hello. We hear a lot about terrible crimes committed by Germans during World War II, but we hear very little about crimes committed against Germans. Germany's defeat in May 1945 and the end of World War II in Europe did not bring an end to death and suffering for the vanquished German people. Instead, the victorious Allies ushered in a new era of destruction, looting, starvation, rape, ethnic cleansing, and mass killing. Today I'm going to talk about this suppressed chapter, one that Time magazine once called history's most terrifying piece. Even though this unknown Holocaust is ignored in our motion pictures in classrooms and by our political leaders, the facts are well established. Historians are in basic agreement about the scale of the human catastrophe, which has been laid out in a number of detailed books, including some published in the United States. For example, American historian and jurist Alfred de Zayas, among other scholars, has established that in the years 1945 to 1950, more than 14 million Germans were expelled or forced to flee from large regions of Eastern and Central Europe, of whom more than 2 million were killed or otherwise lost their lives. One recent and particularly useful overview is a 615-page book published in 2007 entitled After the Reich, The Brutal History of Allied Occupation. In it, British historian Giles McDonough details how the ruined and prostrate German Reich, including Austria, was systematically raped and robbed, and how many Germans who survived the war were either killed in cold blood or deliberately left to die of disease, cold, malnutrition, or starvation. He explains how some 3 million Germans died unnecessarily after the official end of hostilities, about 2 million civilians, mostly women, children, and elderly, and about 1 million prisoners of war. Some people take the view that, given the wartime misdeeds of the Nazis, some degree of vengeful violence against the defeated Germans was inevitable and perhaps justified. A common response to reports of Allied atrocities is to say that the Germans deserved what they got. But however valid that argument might be, the appalling cruelties inflicted on the totally prostrate German people went far beyond any understandable retribution. Although I'm focusing today on the treatment of Germans, it's worth keeping in mind that they were not the only victims of post-war Allied brutality. Across Central and Eastern Europe, the heavy hand of Soviet rule continued to take lives of Poles, Hungarians, Ukrainians, and people of other nationalities. As Soviet troops advanced into Central and Eastern Europe during the war's final months, they imposed a reign of terror, pillage, and killing without compare in modern history. The horrors were summarized by George F. Kennan, the acclaimed historian who later served as U.S. ambassador to the Soviet Union. He wrote, "The disaster that befell this area and the entry of the Soviet forces has no parallel in modern European experience. There were considerable sections of it where, to judge by all existing evidence, Scarcely a man, woman, or child of the indigenous population was left alive after the initial passage of Soviet forces, and one cannot believe that they all succeeded in fleeing to the West. The Russians swept the native population clean in a manner that had no parallel since the days of the Asiatic hordes. During the last months of the war, the ancient German city of Königsberg in East Prussia held out as a strongly defended urban fortress. After repeated attack and siege by the Red Army, it finally surrendered in early April 1945. Soviet troops then ravaged the civilian population. The people were beaten, robbed, killed, and, if female, raped. The rape victims included nuns. Even hospital patients were robbed of their meager possessions. Bunkers and shelters packed with terrified people huddling inside were torched with flamethrowers. About 40,000 Germans were killed or took their own lives to escape the horrors. The city's remaining 73,000 Germans were brutally deported. In a report that appeared in August 1945 in the Washington, D.C. Times-Herald, an American journalist wrote of what he described as, quote, the state of terror in which women in Russian-occupied Eastern Germany were living. All these women, Germans, Polish, Jewish, and even Russian girls freed from Nazi slave camps, were dominated by one desperate desire, to escape from the Red Zone. In the district around our internment camp, Red soldiers during the first weeks of their occupation raped every woman and girl between the ages of 12 and 60. That sounds exaggerated, but it is the simple truth. The only exceptions were girls who managed to remain in hiding in the woods or who had the presence of mind to feign illness, typhoid, diphtheria, or some other infectious disease. Husbands and fathers who attempted to protect their womenfolk were shot down, and girls offering extreme resistance were murdered. In accord with policy set by the big three Allied leaders, Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin, millions of Germans were expunged from their ancient homelands in Central and Eastern Europe. In October 1945, a report from occupied Berlin that appeared in the Chicago Tribune and in the New York Daily News told readers, quote, in the windswept courtyard of the Stettiner Bahnhof rail station, a cohort of German refugees, part of 12 million to 19 million dispossessed in East Prussia and Silesia, sat in groups under a driving rain and told the story of their miserable pilgrimage, during which more than 25% died by the roadside, and the remainder were so starved they scarcely had strength to walk. A nurse from Stettin, a young, good-looking blonde, told how her father had been stabbed to death by Russian soldiers who, after raping her mother and sister, tried to break into her own room. She escaped and hid in a haystack with four other women for 4 days. On the train to Berlin, she was pillaged once by Russian troops and twice by Poles. Women who resisted were shot dead, she said, and on one occasion, she saw a guard take an infant by the legs and crush its skull against a post because the child cried while the guard was raping its mother. An old peasant from Silesia said victims were robbed of everything they had, even their shoes. Infants were robbed of their swaddling clothes so that they froze to death. All the healthy girls and women, even those 65 years of age, were raped in the train and then robbed, the peasant said. In November 1945, an item in the Chicago Tribune told readers, quote, 909 men, women, and children dragged themselves and their luggage from a Russian railway train at Lehrter Station in Berlin today, after 11 days traveling in boxcars from Poland. Red Army soldiers lifted 91 corpses from the train while relatives shrieked and sobbed as their bodies were piled in American Lend-Lease trucks and driven off for internment in a pit near a concentration camp. The refugee train was like a macabre Noah's Ark. Every car was packed with Germans. The families carry all their earthly belongings in sacks, bags, and tin trunks. Nursing infants suffer the most as their mothers are unable to feed them, and frequently go insane as they watch offspring slowly die before their eyes. Today, four screaming, violently insane mothers were bound with rope to prevent them from clawing other passengers. Although most of the millions of German girls and women who were ravished by Allied soldiers were raped by Red Army troops, Soviet soldiers were not the only perpetrators. During the French occupation of Stuttgart, a large city in southwest Germany, police records show that 1,198 women and 8 men were raped, mostly by French troops from Morocco in North Africa, although the prelate of the Lutheran Evangelical Church estimated the number at 5,000. During World War II, the United States, Britain, and Germany complied with the international regulations on the treatment of prisoners of war as required by the Geneva Accord of 1929. But at the end of the war, the U.S. and British authorities scrapped the Geneva Convention in violation of solemn international obligations and Red Cross rules. The American and British authorities stripped millions of captured German soldiers of their status and their rights as prisoners of war by reclassifying them as so-called disarmed enemy forces or surrendered enemy personnel. Accordingly, British and American authorities denied access by International Red Cross representatives to camps holding German prisoners of war. Moreover, any attempt by German civilians to feed the prisoners was punishable by death. Many thousands of German POWs died in American custody, most infamously in the so-called Rhine Meadow camps, where prisoners were held under appalling conditions with no shelter and very little food. In April 1946, the International Committee of the Red Cross protested that the United States, Britain, and France, nearly a year after the end of fighting, were violating international Red Cross agreements they had solemnly pledged to uphold. The Red Cross pointed out, for example, that the American transfer of German prisoners of war to French and British authorities for forced labor was contrary to the international Red Cross statutes. Another report by the International Committee of the Red Cross in August 1946 stated that the U.S. government, through its military branch in the U.S. zone of occupation in Germany, was exacting forced labor from 284,000 captives. Of them, 140,000 in the U.S. occupation zone, 100,000 in France, 30,000 in Italy, and 14,000 in Belgium. Holdings of German prisoners or slave laborers by other countries, the Red Cross reported, included 80,000 in Yugoslavia and 45,000 in Czechoslovakia.
Don't go away, because there's more on Mark Weber's World Watch. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com.
We're now a little over 400 cases confirmed, another 700 probable cases in 44 states. And we know there will be more cases. Those numbers will go up. We anticipate, unfortunately, that there are likely to be more hospitalizations and more deaths. 36,000 people die a year from seasonal flu, so we are likely to see a continued outbreak. The good news is this virus does not seem to be as severe as we once thought it could be based on the very early studies in Mexico. So there's new guidance being put out as we speak that will recommend that schools cease closing the school itself with affected cases. Having said that, we know that it makes it even more important that parents and teachers and others pay attention to sickness as it breaks out. So we're urging parents to take steps. If your child is sick, please do not send your child to school, because your child will transmit the virus likely to additional children. If a teacher is sick, please don't come to school. And parents, don't turn around and keep your child home from school and send him or her to the mall. There are lots of people who are available. This is really about staying home for a period of time until the infection can't be spread any further.
Let's return to Mark Weber's World Watch, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com. And now, here is your host, Mark Weber.
Both during and after the war, the Allies tortured German prisoners. In one British center in England called the London Cage, German prisoners were subjected to systematic ill-treatment, including starvation and beatings. The brutality continued for several years after the end of the war. Treatment of German prisoners by the British was even more harsh in the British occupation zone of Germany. At the U.S. internment center at Schwäbisch Hall in southwest Germany, prisoners awaiting trial by American military courts were subjected to severe and systematic torture, including long stretches in solitary confinement, extremes of heat and cold, deprivation of sleep and food, and severe beatings, including kicks to the groin. Most of the German prisoners of war who died in Allied captivity were held by the Soviets, and a much higher portion of German POWs died in Soviet custody than perished in British and American captivity. For example, of the 90,000 Germans who surrendered at Stalingrad, only 5,000 ever returned to their homeland. More than 5 years after the end of the war, hundreds of thousands of German prisoners were still being held in the Soviet Union. Other German prisoners perished after the end of the war in Yugoslavia, Poland, and other countries. In Yugoslavia alone, authorities of the communist regime killed as many as 80,000 Germans. German prisoners toiled as slave labor in other Allied countries, often for years. At the Yalta Conference in early 1945, the big three Allied leaders of the U.S., Britain, and the Soviet Union, Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin, agreed that the Soviets could take Germans as forced laborers or slave labor. It is estimated that 874,000 German civilians were abducted to the Soviet Union. These were in addition to the millions of prisoners of war who were held by the Soviets as forced laborers. Of these so-called reparations deportees, nearly half, 45%, perished. For 2 years after the end of the fighting, Germans were victims of a cruel and vindictive occupation policy that amounted to slow starvation of the defeated population. To sustain life, a normal adult needs a minimum of about 2,000 calories per day. But in March and February 1946, the daily intake per person in the British and American occupation zones of Germany was between 1,000 and 1,500 calories per day. In the winter of 1945-1946, the Allies forbid anyone outside the country to send food parcels to the starving Germans. The Allied authorities also rejected requests by the International Red Cross to bring in provisions to alleviate the suffering. Very few persons in Britain and the United States spoke out against the Allied policy. Victor Golantz, an English-Jewish writer and publisher, toured the British occupation zone of northern Germany for 6 weeks in late 1946. He publicized the death and malnutrition he found there, which he said was a consequence of Allied policy. He wrote, "The plain fact is we are starving the Germans, and we are starving them not deliberately in the sense that we definitely want them to die, but willfully in the sense that we prefer their death to our own inconvenience." Another person who protested was Bertrand Russell, the noted philosopher and Nobel Prize recipient. In a letter published in a London newspaper in October 1945, he wrote, "In Eastern Europe now, mass deportations are being carried out by our allies on an unprecedented scale, and an apparently deliberate attempt is being made to exterminate many millions of Germans, not by gas, but by depriving them of their homes and of food, leaving them to die by slow and agonizing starvation. This is not done as an act of war, but as part of a deliberate policy of peace." As the war was ending in what is now the Czech Republic, hysterical mobs brutally assaulted ethnic Germans, members of a minority group whose ancestors had lived there for centuries. In Prague, German soldiers were rounded up, disarmed, tied to stakes, doused with gasoline, and set on fire as living torches. In some cities and towns in what is now the Czech Republic, every German over the age of 6 was forced to wear on his clothing, sewn on his left breast, a large white circle, 6 inches in diameter, with the black letter N, which is the first letter of the Czech word for German. Germans were also banned from all parks, places of public entertainment, and public transportation, and not allowed to leave their homes after 8 in the evening. Later, all these people were expelled, along with the entire ethnic German population of what is now the Czech Republic. In the territory of what is now the Czech Republic, 250,000 ethnic Germans were killed. In Poland, the so-called Office of State Security, an agency of the country's new Soviet-controlled government, imposed its own brutal form of denazification. Its agents raided German homes, rounding up some 200,000 men, women, children, and infants, 99% of them non-combatant, innocent civilians. They were incarcerated in cellars, prisons, and 1,255 concentration camps where typhus was rampant and torture was commonplace. Between 60,000 and 80,000 Germans perished at the hands of the Office of State Security. We are ceaselessly reminded of the Third Reich's wartime concentration camps. But few Americans are aware that such infamous camps as Dachau, Buchenwald, Sachsenhausen, and Auschwitz were kept in operation after the end of the war, only now packed with German captives, many of whom perished miserably. For years, we've heard a lot about so-called Nazi art theft, but however large the scale of confiscation of art by Germans in World War II, it was dwarfed by the massive theft of artworks and other objects of cultural value by the Allies. The Soviets alone looted some 2.5 million art objects, including 800,000 paintings. In addition, many statues, paintings, and other priceless artworks were destroyed by the Allies. In the war's aftermath, the victors put many German military and political leaders to death or sentenced them to lengthy prison terms. After much publicized trials in which the Allies were both prosecutor and judge. The best known of these trials was before the so-called International Military Tribunal at Nuremberg, where officials of the 4 Allied powers were both prosecutors and judges. Justice, as opposed to vengeance, is a standard that is applied impartially. But in the aftermath of World War II, the victorious powers imposed standards of justice that applied only to the vanquished. The governments of the United States, the Soviet Union, and other member states of the so-called United Nations held Germans to a standard that they categorically refused to respect themselves. Robert Jackson, the chief U.S. prosecutor at the Nuremberg Tribunal of 1945-46, privately acknowledged in a letter to President Truman that the Allies, quote, have done or are doing some of the very things we are prosecuting the Germans for. The French are so violating the Geneva Convention in the treatment of German prisoners of war that our command is taking back prisoners sent to them for forced labor in France. We are prosecuting plunder, and our allies are practicing it. We say aggressive war is a crime, and one of our allies asserts sovereignty over the Baltic states based on no title except conquest. Germans were executed or imprisoned for policies that the Allies themselves were carrying out, sometimes on a far greater scale. German military and political leaders were put to death on the basis of a hypocritical double standard, which means that these executions were essentially acts of judicial murder dressed up with the trappings and forms of legality. If the standards of the Nuremberg Tribunal had been applied impartially, many American, Soviet, and other Allied military and political leaders would have been hanged. 2 years after the end of the war, American and British policy toward the defeated Germans changed. The U.S. and British governments began to treat the Germans as potential allies rather than as vanquished subjects and to appeal for their support. This shift in policy was not prompted by an awakening of humanitarian spirit. Instead, it was motivated by American and British fear of Soviet-Russian expansion and by the realization that the economic recovery of Europe as a whole required a prosperous and productive Germany. An awareness of how the defeated Germans were treated by the victors helps in understanding why Germans continued to fight during the final months of the war with a determination, tenacity, and willingness to sacrifice that has few parallels in history, even as their cities were being smashed into ruins under relentless bombing, and even as defeat against numerically superior enemy forces seemed inevitable. How history is presented is an expression of a society's outlook and values, and of its hierarchy of power. That's why, year after year, more than six decades after the end of World War II, Jewish death and suffering, above all what is known as the Holocaust, is given such prominent attention in our schools, in motion pictures, and by our government, and why the death and suffering of Germans and other non-Jews, especially during World War II, is all but ignored. Thanks for being with me today. I hope you'll join me for the next World Watch broadcast. To learn more about the Institute for Historical Review and our work, please check out our website, ihr.org.
Thanks for listening. Mark Weber's World Watch returns Tuesday evening, 9 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.